You're listening to the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. For more shows, visit the podcast page at laughfactory.com.
It's the After Laugh, After Laugh. Welcome to the After Laugh, After Laugh, After Laugh. After Laugh, man.
Go ahead, pull I'm up very chair. Excited today because I'm here with my friend who I haven't seen in a long time, and I don't know the reason for that, but Matt Del Negro, Matthew Del Negro. What is your official? Is it Matthew or Matt?
I mean, in life, I generally am Matt, but there's a story behind Matthew Del Negro as an actor. So when I started in like whatever, you know, out of college, early 90s, early to mid 90s, I was going on like commercial auditions and they would say slate your name. So on my headshots I had Matt Del Negro because that's what I've always gone as. So I'd go Matt Del Negro, and I swear, and it's so bizarre to me, everybody would be like Mac, and I'm like and I'm like, no, Matthew. For like a year I did this because I didn't want to get new headshots, and I'm like, how many fucking Macs do you know? And there's like a Matt every like, you know, fourth person is a Matt. And I'm like, why is everybody saying I'm Matt? So I'm like, you know, then you go through the thing, you're like, Matt Del Negro. You know, and I'm like, fuck this. So I was just like, all right, I'm going to go as Matthew Del Negro, which sounded so formal to me.
Yeah.
But it's turned out to be, you know, it's actually turned out to be good because, like, then I'd be bartending. And if someone, like, you know, it's a crowded bar or whatever, someone came in, they're like, Matthew, and you don't know, you're like, okay, well, I know them from work.
From work,
because no one in my, you know, normal life will call me Matthew. But anyway, that's it. But then you see, like, an old friend, and they're like, oh, you're Matthew now? Oh, like, no, I'm not Matthew. I just go for it, you know. It looks better on a thing.
It's Robert De Niro, but it's really Bobby De Niro.
It's Bobby D.
People sometimes, I say my name, they go, Dill Dawes? I'm like, do you know anyone named Dill? How is that fucking possible? It happens all the time. So me and Matt, we met in
2002.
When we were, what, were we 18? How about were we then?
We were 14.
And we were doing an off-Broadway play called Burning Blue.
Yep. And it was a very, you know, like, it was a very kind of interesting time for my life because I was coming off of, like, I literally, when we met, probably August of, I think we started rehearsing for that play in August.
Fall show.
I got married September 7th, 2002. So,
oh, wow.
And I had done Sopranos the winter and spring before, and our play, so I got married September 7th. My Soprano stuff started airing September 15th, and then our play was maybe September, like it opened on maybe the 21st or something there. You know, somewhere it was like all at once when we met. So it was a really kind of...
So you were recurring on Sopranos, yeah?
I did, yeah. That was like, it turned out to be, that was like my really... Not my only season. I did a couple of little things after that, but that was the fourth season, and I did like 9 episodes that fourth season.
Oh, wow.
Something like that. Eight episodes, maybe, and then maybe did another one.
By the way, huge, right? At that point, your career
I always say that is like the story of getting that and then like announcing it to my family and like to Deirdre and all this stuff. It's like, I don't think I will ever have... This is maybe sad to say, but I don't think I'll ever have a get like that. That will be that dramatic in my life.
Because you were so bartending.
Again. Well, because it was like... I was so naive also. It was the hugest show in the world.
Yeah.
I was still bartending. I had done a bunch of plays at that point, but most of which were like black box theater for no money. Nobody saw them except my family and friends. Like, I had done, you know, they did one indie film that kind of got seen, but it was through backstage. I did a bunch of, like, you know, short, you know, student films and all that, no budget, whatever. I had done, like, maybe at that point one Law and Order, and maybe I did this pilot just like a guest in a pilot called The Street. It was a Darren Star pilot.
I remember that.
Yeah. I had done like no, really very minimal television.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went in for the role. The material for the audition, it was somewhat dense. Mm-hmm. It was like financial jargon and all this. But they also, there were scenes from later episodes. So I knew, they didn't tell me how many, but I knew from looking at it, I'm like, oh, this character's like, he's here in this first scene, and then he's in a very different spot in the last scene. So I'm like, yeah. I know it's going to be at least like 4 or 6 episodes. So I knew it was a big role.
Yeah.
And I had been in for that show a bunch before for a lot smaller roles. Never got them. So when I got it, I was like, you know, I had visions.
Do you remember
that
where
was,
you were and the
dude,
phone call?
Oh, dude. Yes, absolutely.
Where were you? Mean,
so the call, so what happened was, I went in. I mean, do you want the long version?
I love it. Hey, we got a long form podcast.
People are going to be like, this dude will not shut up.
No, because I think people are really fascinated by the idea of a break. You know what I mean? When people, because we're all the fucking same, and everyone get a break in any field that they're in. And something as dramatic as it can happen for actors and comics and singers or whatever.
Yeah.
This is going to happen, by the way. People are going to knock on doors because they just love knocking on doors.
Hi.
And saying,
yes. Oh, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
Should we keep this in the interview?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
We're doing a COVID test.
Oh, we're doing a COVID test. So
we're doing a.
Hi. Guys, I'm just
liming. He and I worked together like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, almost 20 years ago, and so
in
we're
a
doing
play
a interview for his podcast.
In an interview.
We're giving you guys the real thing.
So right now, I should tell people we are on the set of City on a Hill, season 3.
I killed it.
The first.
You did.
How'd you do? I beat you in Boston. Who does that?
Wait, so what was your...
It was only 3:15.
It was a brief break. We had the COVID test. Matty D had to take his COVID test.
Yeah.
That we do... Was it every 2 days?
The new, three times a week now.
Three times a week, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it's a double vax set, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
boosters coming. Yeah, you know, that's a whole other subject. We get.
You guys are lucky. We were going to keep it rolling. We thought this was like authentic fly on the wall, and then we're like,
but then she started talking about her marathon run with a mask on her face. It's like no one's going to hear this.
What was? Oh, about the Soprano stuff.
Where were you when you found out?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. The long you were saying about people like breaks. They like to hear about breaks. So yeah, there was. This is like, you know. Later on, we could talk about 10,000 No's, but it's kind of because of this. It's like, so that was a huge break, and you could just look at it as like the audition, got the role, whatever. But it's never that simple.
Yeah.
So if you scratch the surface and you go back, there's a whole history with George Ann Walken, who cast Sopranos. So remember before I said one of the movies I did okay? It was out of Backstage. So when I was a little younger than that, I got... Something that was originally, it was through Backstage, it was non-union, it was like any other Backstage call. It was called The North End. Two brothers in Boston, Frank Ciotta and Joe Ciotta. Frank directed it, Joe wrote it. Frank was a PA on Casino. Mm-hmm. He got the script to Frank Vincent, who, the late Frank Vincent, who eventually was also on Sopranos, played Phil Leotardo.
Mm-hmm.
But, when I got the job, it was non-union. Then Frank Vincent signed on and got his friend Tony Darrow, who was in Goodfellas, and Nick Puccio to do it. The movie became union.
Mm-hmm.
I was the lead of it. There was another role. It was like a love triangle, and there was a role of my roommate and a buddy of mine had gone in for it, and they were like, we can't find the guy. And I'm like, my buddy Mark came in. You should... cast him. I already know him.
Yeah.
We have a relationship, whatever. And we went up and did this movie in Boston called The North End. It was like we drove ourselves up there and like stayed up there. It was awesome.
What was the budget?
Oh, I mean, it was like
less than a million.
Less than a million. But it was like a friends and family type of set. They, you know, Frank had gone to Harvard, played football at Harvard, and like was from Boston. Like we used all of these, you know, great restaurants like La Dolce Vita was where the final scene was, a couple of scenes in there, and like all over Hanover Street and everything. We stayed in Southie actually the first time, and then we went like we stayed in the actual apartment that was in the movie
that
was in the North End.
So you had to do the Southie accent.
No. Didn't have a Southie. I was like a guy who was like trapped between two worlds, which is kind of like what I ended up playing on Sopranos, ironically, which kind of comes full circle, I guess. But I was like the kid that, like, I played football at Harvard, and I wanted to be a filmmaker. I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker, so I wanted to go out west, but I fall in love with this girl in the North End, and then her godfather is Frank Vincent's character. Dom DiBella was his name. And he takes me under his wing, and I'm kind of, like, caught. And it's actually very similar to what I ended up getting in Sopranos.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which kind of works into the
story. So the movie got bought, it had
So the movie got... It didn't actually get distributed and everything, but it went to Montreal Film Festival. We went up there. That was like cool. It was like, you know, getting to pretend we were celebrities for a couple days.
Right.
It went
first
to Boston.
Carpets,
yeah,
maybe,
like
yeah.
It went to Boston Film Festival,
which is a great festival.
Which was awesome, and it was like opening night there, and like you know, it was like we it played in like a theater in Seekonk, I think it's called, which is maybe Rhode Island or maybe Massachusetts. It's near Providence. And it was the same thing. It was like, you know, you're signing autographs. People are treating you like you're somebody. And I was, you know, really young. I loved the movie. I loved the whole... It was just a great, great, great experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, it got written up in Variety. It wasn't like it got this amazing... But it was like the first thing I did that, like, anybody might have seen
huge.
Or heard about. But it still wasn't, like, huge. But it was enough to go, like, okay.
And the industry, some people saw it,
probably minimal, you know, but at the time I was like, all right, I got cast in the lead with a guy who's been in Raging Bull, Goodfellas, Casino, like, I must have something, because you always feel like,
am I a fraud?
You feel like you're in class, and you think you're, you know, you think like, I got something here, I got something, but like nobody, like I couldn't get an agent, you know. It's like I had like agents that would, like, you know, they'd freelance with me, they'd send me on crappy stuff. Like, it was really, really hard. Like, nobody, you know, it's like nobody was buying what I was selling. So that helped. Anyway, Georgianne cast that. Georgianne had nothing to do with that. Those guys, we do it. I become friends with those guys. They go, look, we got another script that Joe wrote. And Frank's like, you're my alter ego. You're going to be the lead. It's about this guy who's a college quarterback, and he goes to Italy. He falls in love with a girl in Italy. You're going to do it. I'm like, boom, awesome.
Fuck yeah, Italy?
So, yeah. I'm like, Italy, yeah. I'm like, I'm going to go to Italy to do a movie? So I literally got, like, bus tickets up to Boston to do table reads. Like, when the North End actually needed financing, I didn't have a lot of money. I bartended, but I put in, I want to say, like, $2,000 of my own. And I convinced my brother and his friends, who had more money than me, to put in. We came up with, like, $20,000 we put into the North End, which we never got. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do this next movie with them. Done the things. They bring Georgianne in to cast it. And she convinces them that I'm not the right guy. And I was like, what?
They told you that later. They're like, hey, man, we got to tell you.
They kind of told me as it because, like, I was doing it. You know, like, it was like I was supposed to be really doing it. And then it was like they got the official casting and all that. And she's like, he's not the right guy. And I was like, well, what do you mean? You know, he's like, you're too heroic looking. Like, you're too, like, they need someone who's more damaged.
Rough around the edges.
And she had somebody else.
Who was it? Do you remember?
I do remember. I can't think of his name right now. I wouldn't say it on here anyway.
Yeah,
but, but we should definitely IMDb and see him.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name right
now. Did the movie come out?
The movie was made, and I love those guys. I'm actually still in touch with Frank, and I don't know that it did. I don't think it did much, but I'm sure it did, like, a similar kind of thing, you know? And then they made another movie. They made a couple more movies that... I'm blanking now on who was in it. Somebody who's a reputable actor. It'll come to me. What is it? Do the Right Thing. What's his name?
No. Giancarlo Esposito?
Nope. Nope. Big guy, Italian guy. He died a couple of years ago.
Danny Aiello
was in one of their movies. I think they did a movie called Stiffs. Great guy. Great brothers and everything. But anyway, Georgianne, in my mind, I was like, what the fuck? Like, she totally screwed me. I kind of, like, hated her for a bit. And then Sopranos came about, because Sopranos wasn't around at that point still. And then when Sopranos came out, she would bring me in for that. It was she and Sheila Jaffe, And I went in for some smaller things. I would get called back to producers, go over to Silver Cup. There'd be like 50 people there. You'd go in, you'd read your couple of lines, and you wouldn't get it. You know, I mean, I went
Thank you.
I went in for the guy who got like, I think, beaten with a stapler at like Wabistics or whatever it was when Christopher had this whole little storyline of Wall Street. I went in for, you know, like a traffic cop, like small stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And this role came. And I remember this audition came, and I had to bartend that night, and I saw it was like a chunk. One of the scenes, which turned out to be the first scene of my character, was like a chunk of financial jargon. And I'm like pitching Tony. I'm Carmela's cousin, and I'm pitching Tony on this stuff. And, you know, my brother at the time had gone into finance, a bunch of my friends from college, like the bar where I worked was all like guys that I knew that worked on Wall Street, came in and drank, and it was like a suit bar. And so I knew these guys. I knew this. I wasn't unit one, but it was a financial analyst or financial advisor playing. And I'm like, I have a handle. I feel like I could have a shot with this. Like I can get these words, which are technical.
Yeah.
I can get them into my, I can understand it. I can make it something.
Yeah.
So I was just like, it doesn't sound like a big deal now, but at the time I was like, I gave up my shift, which meant like $400 cash.
Yeah.
For a first audition, you know, I was just like, I don't want to be tired. I want to be totally, I want to have these lines.
Yeah.
I go in, read for Georgianne. I'm really making this story fucking long.
It's great.
Boring as shit. And I go in, I read for Georgianne, and she's like,
just by herself in the room.
Just by herself. It's like a pre-read, really. And I feel like this, I can play that. Like, I can do this as well as anybody else in the city. That's how I thought of it.
Sure.
I got to have a shot. So anyway, I do it, and I could tell she's kind of like, okay, good. Do this. She gave me some pointers, and she's like, I'm going to bring you in for the producer. So I was like, great. Go in, go to Silver Cup, like, I don't know, a couple days later, in Long Island City. I go in, I read for the room. It feels good, but you know, you like,
at this point, there's like 10 people in the room or
something like that. I can't even remember.
Do you get nervous in those situations where all of a sudden there's like a lot of people?
Totally. It's like, you know, it depends. I mean, I'm less so now.
Yeah.
I definitely was then, and I knew it was a big show, so yeah. And it's also like, as you know, you got your reader, you know, you're going to read with Georgianne or someone from the casting office, and then the other people are sitting around, and I don't know if you went in for Sopranos, but it was like, I can't even, it's funny, I can't even really remember exactly what that room looked like. I remember the hallway leading to it, and like, I remember there being maybe 5 or 6 people in there, and I didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
So I go in, it feels good, but you're always like, yeah. But, like, you know, you don't get most of them, so you're not like, yeah. Like, I think I probably felt good, and I can't really remember if I felt like I nailed it, I'm going to get it, or what. I think I felt pretty good. I get a call a couple days later from my agent at the time, and he's like, you're the front runner for this job. And I was like, holy shit, really? He's like, there's good news and bad news. You're the front runner is the good news. The bad news is they want to see you again next week.
Yeah.
They want to see a few more people. So I'm like, all right, okay, this is like,
so now it's yours to blow.
It goes from thinking like, I can get this, dude, I'm going to get this, fuck everybody, you know, I'm the better. And then all of a sudden they're like, you're the front runner, but they want to see a couple. And now you're like, dude, I mean, I'm never going to get this. So I go to that callback, and there's like nobody around. There's two names on the call, on the sign-in sheet, and one of them is with CAA, and one of them is with William Morris.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, great. I didn't recognize the names, but I'm like, great. They're bringing in, like, these guys that have done way more than me, and, you know, like, come on, you know? And I'm sitting there like this, waiting to go in, and I'm kind of like, you know, bobbing my knees up and down, looking down. I'm like, just kind of focusing on the scene. And all of a sudden, a guy walks by, and he just goes, relax, kid. And I look up, and it's David Chase.
Oh, wow.
And he walks into the room, and I'm like, fuck, are you relaxed, Dave? So I'm like,
which probably made you more nervous.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, just, you know, keep it together. I go in, I do it, I come out, I feel like I got through it.
Yeah.
I felt, you know, like I was pretty solid getting through it. I don't think I felt particularly like, nailed it. You know, I didn't. I felt like, it was solid audition. It was certainly not a bad audition. I don't know that it was like relaxed. You know what I mean? I don't know that it was great. Get on a train, go back to the city. I'm like, forget about it. It was like Christmas time. A little before Christmas. I go back. I get off. I'm making this really long.
I love it.
I get off the train. I go and I'm like, screw this. Like, you know, I had the big cell phone like at the time. You know, it was a huge cell phone. This is like, it's 2001.
It was 2001. Still pretty big then. Yeah.
Yeah. And I go into a deli. I'm like, screw this. Like, you're not going to get service in the deli. I go in, I get an egg sandwich. I eat it in the back. Like, there's no cell service. I come out. At the time, Deirdre was working in Midtown and I was going to get this like perfume for her for Christmas on Park Ave, or on is it Park Ave with the two two lanes and the island in the middle? How am I, Madison Ave? No, not Madison. Park, I guess.
Yeah,
Park, right? Yeah, Park Ave. So I'm like in Midtown and I check my messages or whatever. And someone I told this story to was like, really? That's so odd that, like, for some Sopranos podcast, they're like, it's odd she would leave you a message. But I checked and it was like, hey, Matt, I remember this. Hey, Matt, it's George Ann. I just wanted to tell you. And I'm like, fuck. Like, her tone of voice was like, and I'm like, just fuck, man. Was I going to go back to the fucking drawing board? And she's like, you got the part, kiddo. And I was like, you know, walking on the street. I'm like, holy fucking shit. Like, I get goosebumps right now. I was like, holy shit. And I just, like, I couldn't tell anybody, but I'm like, holy shit. I go into the store. I knew the perfume I was getting. There was, like, a certain name I got from her sister or whatever. And it was like, I don't buy perfume. I don't know anything. And it was, whatever it was really way more expensive than anything I would have bought.
Yeah.
And there was like this size, and then there was like this size. And I was like, fuck it, give me the big one. And I go, I get it. And I couldn't even tell these people, but I'm just like giddy. And I'm walking, and I just go, screw it. I'm going to Deirdre's work. And she was on like 59th and Park or somewhere right by. And I go down there. I go up, and like I knew the people that she worked with or whatever, and I walk in and I saw her, and I was just like, and she looked up, she's like, everything okay? And I was like, tears in my eyes.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got it.
Yeah.
I got it. And like, I get emotional now thinking about it. Like, and all of her coworkers were like, holy shit, you know? Like, I mean, look, goosebumps. It's like, it was so, you know, I look back now and I think like, man, I wasn't really even doing it that long, but it was like 7 years.
Yeah.
7 or 8 years at that point. So that is a long time. Now I look and I'm like, well, that's nothing.
That's nothing. Yeah.
That's nothing, kid. You're still starry eyed. But like, it was like so much, as you know, so much angst, so much pummeling, and you get something that you're like, holy crap, like this actually, people will see this.
Yeah.
And
it was already huge.
And it was huge. It was huge. And I knew the role. I didn't know all it was going to entail, but from the material for the audition, I knew it was like that scene and then this other stuff that you could just tell was later on down the line, and it was like a bit of an arc. And I'm like, I was just like, holy shit, I'm going to be a real role on this show. And it was, you know, so going back to what I was saying before, I'll never have a get like that. I was young enough. I wasn't that young. I mean, I was like 30. But maybe I was 29. I'm trying to think, whatever it was. I was 30. I was 29. I would have been 30 the next summer. So still, it was like, my mind went, I was like, this is the Sopranos, and I've got a main thing, and I'm like, I'm going to be on Letterman's couch after this. Doing movies.
This is going to be nonstop,
Yeah, I just had an idea, and I guess that all could have happened. That did not happen, but I was at that point where I was like, just really, I don't know, naive in a certain way, whereas now, even if I got a really big part.
Yeah, you're like, let's see how this goes.
I would still be like, you know, cool, great. Oh, you're working with, you know, I don't know, name the biggest star right now. Who's the, whoever you want to say. DiCaprio. It's like, you and DiCaprio. You're like, okay, there's a pretty good shot. That's going to be good. But not everything goes. You don't know what's going to happen. Like, I've been through the ringer that I'm like, cool, take the job, super psyched, can't wait to do the work, can't wait to work with this kind of talent. Hopefully it gets seen. But you just, you don't know.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows. So I'm, it's not that I don't still have the excitement and the joy for it, but in on a career standpoint, I'm not as naive as I was. Yeah. And I also
now, like, you've done so much that, like, that's a quantum leap from where you were to doing Sopranos, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now it'd be like a jump up, like a step, but it would be the same.
That was a really big, big leap. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I went from, like, people would ask me what I did. It was like a 10-minute monologue, and by the end of it, I'm like, and I'm kind of trying to be an actor. It's like, well, I bartender at Turtle Bay, and I work the counter at California Pizza Kitchen, and I'm taking classes at Terry Schreiber, and
I'm an actor.
Yeah, like, that show literally changed that overnight, because then I'd be on the subway.
Yeah.
It was one of those shows that, like, probably if there's anyone young listening to this, they're like, they still don't really grasp it unless you live through it. But, like, everybody watched that fucking show on Sunday night.
Yeah.
They watch it at the same time. So I got on the subway. It was like, dude, you're Tony's boy. Like, and it was just the weirdest, fucking most surreal thing.
Yeah.
And it's not like I was, you know, Ben Affleck with paparazzi going. It wasn't like my life changing that way. But it did. It shifted, and it really was that. It was a kind of show that, you know, when you think about the like a stone into a pond and the ripples go out, it's the kind of show that I didn't even realize. Like, a couple years later, I was in LA. I got this. It was cool. It was considered like a major recurring role on a pilot that was supposed to be like the next Sex in the City, although it didn't get picked up.
Yeah.
It was Ivan Reitman, who's kind of his own
legend,
of a giant. And he was directing. We shot it in Vancouver. And I was like, it was like day four of working. I had met him. I had auditioned for him. I got the job. I went there. I had worked. And it was like day four, and something happened. And I go, oh, should I go over here? He goes, yeah, just go over there, Mr. Bada Bing. And I was like, holy shit, Ivan Reitman knows me. You know, like, you know, I knew he knew me because we were working together.
Yeah.
But I'm like, he knows me before he saw me on Sopranos.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. Like, it was really one of those moments where it dawned, like, oh, people in this industry
watch that show. All the have seen you on some level.
They've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, then you're like, well, why the fuck am I not doing more now?
Well, you did say, you joked, you're like, oh, yeah, I thought after I did that. So was there kind of like not a fall from grace, but was there kind of like a moment afterwards where you thought, like,
absolutely
wide open, and there was a little bit of a crash?
Yeah, so totally. I actually, like, in the book I talk about, like,
so let's tell people. So you have a book called 10,000
No's.
We'll get to 10,000
No's. Yeah. So I had a podcast called 10,000 No's. I still have a podcast called 10,000 No's, and that led to a book deal where I kind of talk about a lot of this stuff. And I talk about, like, after Sopranos. So
how many episodes of Sopranos was it?
I think that season was, I want to say, like, 8. And then I did, in the 5th season, I did one thing at I was like basically a glorified extra. And then in the very last, one of the last seasons, I buy a spec house from Carmella. And then they asked me to be in the series finale, like, have one line at a funeral, but I was working on a show in LA and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So after that, it's like, I did that. We did the play. I know the play had its own, it was a debacle we could talk about. But at the time, that was actually my first off-Broadway show.
Yeah.
Like, I had only done Black Box Theater and whatever. So it was like, that was happening. I was getting married. Like, all this stuff was happening. And I said, this is the time I've got to go to LA for pilot season. I got to strike while the iron's hot. I go out there. I convince Deirdre to leave her job and come out there with me. I'm like, it's weird. We just got married. I'm going to leave for like 3 months. You should come out with me. We sublet our place in New York, sublet a place out there. Illegally, by the way, because we only rented that place. And we...
So pilot season, for people don't know, is... It doesn't really exist in the same way
not
anymore.
Not in the same way, no.
But it was a time from, like, maybe mid-January to mid-March where they would cast, like...
Everything.
50, 60 shows, 70 shows.
Yeah, it was bananas. I mean, it really was bananas. And that year in particular was amazing for me and amazingly heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Like, I went out there. I thought, like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be like, okay, where's my show?
You know,
going to be like, hey, here's a show,
that
Cousin
was when
Brian.
Development deals were still around. You were like, give me my development deal.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I just thought something was going to happen.
Of course.
And I was super busy. I had meetings all over town. I had multiple, I mean, auditions, like, you were just
crazy.
And at the time, when I think back, my manager at the time, they would get the sides for the audition and call you and say, okay, your sides are in a basket outside my house in West Hollywood. And you would go there and it would be like a stack of papers that say Matt, a stack that say Billy, and
you
take the Matt ones and you go and you study them. You have to drive there, drive back, and then you'd have to drive all around the town and go to the different studios to you know, audition. It was like a bunch of jargon. It was like, you know, it was a lot. And I was having meetings. I remember going to Warner Brothers and meeting with, like, all of the senior vice presidents of casting there.
Yeah.
And it was like, they're like, oh, we love you on the thing. Like, one guy was like, oh my God, we love Cousin Brian. You have to sign your headshot. The guy in the video room loves you. And I was like, oh, it's great. Oh, thanks so much, guys. And I'm like, okay, where's my show?
Yeah, exactly.
It was like that. And then it just kept going and going, and, like, nothing happened.
Testing, getting a lot of traction.
I wasn't even testing. There was one thing that was supposed to be, like, a huge show that kind of tanked after a couple of it ended up getting picked up, but it tanked after a couple of episodes aired. I did, like, a mix and match for that show where they bring, you know, however many people, and they're reading you opposite because it was an ensemble. And then they, like, let me go. It didn't happen. I didn't test. I didn't even test for anything. And I got to the end of that year, and
the
I was just
end
like,
of pilot season, if you haven't booked, is one of the most depressing times of your life.
It was. And we had wedding money that we were given. Like, we kind of, like, rifled. It wasn't like we were even, like, irresponsible, but we just, like, kind of, like, rifled through money, you know, like, it was like, I'm betting on myself, mm-hmm. you know? It was really, really hard and, you know, depressing and all that, and I, like, went back to New York with my tail between my legs, had to bartend again. I bartended for probably another, like, 2 years after that. So, you know, people hear that and they're like, really?
Wait.
I'm like, yeah, man.
Yeah,
I started coaching. In some ways, though, I started, like, coaching younger actors and, like, teaching a scene study class to, like, beginner actors at the time.
Interesting. And where did you do that?
I did it. I, like, would rent a studio on...
So you did it with your own? It was, like, Matt Del Negro.
My own little thing.
School.
I just, like, put a little thing in backstage, and I did this, and then I did, like, some one-on-one stuff, and it was... In a way, that is, like, the predecessor of the podcast.
Yeah.
It's like... It all makes sense now, but at the time I was just like, I'm bartending. I really don't want to be bartending anymore, even though I loved it before. But it was almost like after doing that and having this, like, I'm going to do this.
And you felt like the heat was gone from Sopranos now.
It was like it wasn't like it was gone, but it was like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know? And I went back out the next year, didn't take Deirdre. Like, I went and stayed on a friend's couch and got some stuff. I'm trying to think. So that was 2003. Oh, actually, 2004. I went back out. That's when I got the Ivan Reitman thing.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go. I did something with one of the directors from Sopranos. Gave me something on, like, Joan of Arcadia. I played, like, an ER doctor. It was just, like, he liked me and he gave me, and it was, like, one or two scenes. But I was like, oh, I finally broke into L.A. Like,
yeah,
I did
something out
here. And then, you know, the Ivan Reitman thing had a lot of promise, didn't go. And then I came back. I wore, you know, I would come
so
back.
So, like, every pilot season from January to March, you just go.
I would
there.
Go. So I went the next year, which was 2005. And I got I went in for, while I was there for pilots, I went in for what I thought was an episode of The West Wing. Now, the maybe one or two pilot seasons before that, maybe even that first one when I was doing, after coming off Sopranos maybe, was when Sorkin was still running that show. And I went in for something that they said, we want to cast an unknown. And I went in, again, I felt the way I felt with the Sopranos material. I'm like, this is hard, but I can get my I can get my head around this political jargon. And they called me back. It was like me and four or five other guys reading with Sorkin. They're like, you know, he likes it fast. He likes it speedy. I went in and I was like, boom. I came out and I was like, fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
Did not get it. None of those got it. Those guys got it. They, like they said, they wanted to go with an unknown, so they cast Matthew Perry right off of Friends. He won an Emmy for it. And that was just like, you're like, oh, dude. Okay. So I wasn't really that close. You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so now we're in 2005. I go back in for West Wing, have an audition that felt like, we were talking about this the other day. I went in, Jason Ensler was the guest director. I'm still friends with him to this day. Eli Addy is the guy I was telling you that I thought was a runner.
Yeah.
He wrote that episode and wrote my part. And I went in and I felt like, came out almost like, damn, kind of like dropped that audition. You know, like I didn't really nail it. Got the part. Surprisingly.
And West Wing was huge at this point too, right?
West Wing was big. I mean, it was maybe past its heyday. This was the sixth season. So, you know, traditionalists would say it was past its heyday, but it was still a huge show.
Yeah.
And when I went for the fitting for my first episode, this guy, Philip Heyman, was a costumer. He was great. They're like trying on all these different suits. And I'm like, man, this is kind of like a lot for a guest spot. Like, they're giving me like, this is like a pretty good treatment.
Yeah.
And I had a lot to do in that episode. I had a ton of political jargon. And he basically at that fitting was like, hey, so John Wells at the time was running that show. He's like, you know, they're doing a campaign thing now. Jimmy Smits plays Matt Santos. He's running for president. And they've kind of like split the show into the traditional West Wing and then this campaign stuff. And these roles that are coming in now, they're kind of like an audition to see if they want to keep you around. And I was like, oh, good to know. So the pressure went up, and I'm like, I got to fucking deliver.
Yeah.
So I was so fucking scared to be on the West Wing set because those people are so freaking smart.
Yeah.
And I'm not politically astute. You know, like, I think I'm a smart guy, but I'm not like a current events nut or anything. And these people, let me tell you, they're smart. They are smart people. So I'm just so freaking scared. And I have scenes where I am leading, like, Brad Whitford, Jimmy Smits, Terry Polo, Janine Garofalo down these corridors. And I'm like...
Walk and talks.
And I'm freaking, like, machine gun, rapid fire political shit.
Yeah.
So I think just out of pure fear... I was like, I am going to be fucking prepared.
Yes.
And I was prepared. Yeah. And I felt super comfortable in that first episode. I just felt really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was intimidated, but I once we got in there, it felt good.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was it. And then they called me and they said, you're coming back for it was the finale of that sixth season. I did something there. I didn't have quite as much material, but it was cool. And then they invited me to the wrap party. And I was like literally driving back to New York the next morning. And Alex Graves, I was like, Alex, thank you so much. And he's like, all right, we'll see you next year. And I was like,
what?
Can you put that in writing? He goes, oh, we'll see you next year. Trust me.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, cool. Thank you so much. You know, drive back to New York. And I'm like, I don't know.
Wait, drive back from LA?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because I would drive a car out. I've driven cross country. Like, so I would drive a car, so I had a car out there.
Yeah.
So I literally have driven cross country round trip probably 8 times in my life.
Yeah.
Not always for act. I did it when I was younger, too. And I did it with my son twice recently. So I went back, but I didn't have official news. But I told my agents, I'm like, Alex says they're bringing me back, whatever. And then in like August, they're like, we're guaranteeing him 3 out of the first 5 episodes.
Right.
And I was like, okay, cool. So I was like, we can't like move out there on this. But
yeah.
I went out. Messina was going, was moving out. And that's I literally got into Chris Messina. I literally got opened his apartment before he was even there. I was like on his floor, like in this apartment that he was renting in whatever year that was. And I did that for like a couple of months. And then finally they just kept using me and using me and using me. And I said to Deirdre, I think we should, you know, let's, this is the job that's going to bring us out.
Yeah.
So we had a place at that time. We sold it and we that makes it sound fancy. And we had a really like a place that was awesome, but like, you know, the size of this coffee table York, you know? And we moved out there. That was the fall of, 2006. No, fall of 2005 and whatever.
Yeah.
And then talk about it again, the roller coaster. So I'm doing West Wing. I go in for this show that was on, ABC Family. And it was to do 7 out of 8 episodes on this show called Beautiful People, which is a terrible name, but it was Daphne Zuniga. It was a really cool role, and it was this guy Michael Roush who did Royal Pains.
Yeah,
really, and he had a show called Love Monkey. He was a great guy, and I went in. Really, it was a series regular, but they were paying me as like a recurring role.
Yeah,
that shot in Toronto. So, if you could imagine, after starving for so long, I'm now in LA. I'm recurring on West Wing. And I'm recurring on the show in Toronto. I'm like flying back and forth. I'm like, LA is fucking great.
Yeah.
I'm on two shows.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
That lasts. West Wing, John Spencer, may rest in peace, died right before Christmas. He was awesome. That, I think the show was considering going on from there. We thought it was going to be a spinoff like John Wells did with ER, and we were going to be the new regulars. That show decided to end. Beautiful People had a cliffhanger that came to an end. I went and did a pilot with someone that had shot The West Wing. They had me do this thing, like a one scene at the end of a pilot that was going to be a big thing for Fox. It wasn't, but it was picked up. I got replaced by someone more famous.
Oh, wow.
And all of a sudden, douche.
Yeah.
Down, fucking back, you know, still out.
Financially, you're doing okay at this point.
I was doing okay, but then I went for a chunk of like 8 months where I didn't work after that. That stopped and I couldn't get arrested.
That's crazy to go from that much work to like, we've all been there, yeah.
So I get, and then ties into the Sopranos finale. So then it's finally, I have been out of work. I go in for a Guy Ritchie directed pilot called Suspect. And I'm like, there wasn't a regular, but I was like the lead guest.
Yeah.
I get killed by Michael Madsen, and I get gunned down by Michael Madsen in a parking structure. I'm like, if you're gonna get killed by someone, you should get killed by Michael Madsen. So, and it's Guy Ritchie. I'm like, holy shit, this is pretty fucking cool. And that was after so much time, no work. And again, I said to myself, okay, because I was really, it's like it fucks with your head.
Sure.
But I'm like, so you really like. It's hard. It's like really, really hard. But then I'm like, but Guy Ritchie saw me.
Yeah.
Guy Ritchie hired me.
Yeah.
That's a good. So I'm like, maybe the talented people. I did fucking Sopranos. I did West Wing. Guy Ritchie. But there's a lot of time in between. So that boosted me psychologically. That was the same time Sopranos finale was doing. And that's why I said no to that one line to do this. That show didn't get picked up. The Guy Ritchie thing. But it kind of got me back on my feet a little.
Yeah.
And then I can't even remember.
And,
you know,
and
like,
pilots, people know this. Pilots pay real. I mean, I don't know if they do anymore.
But no, they do, like, but not for me. They do, but not for me. Because they do if you were a regular. Back then, they would give you, if your quote was $30,000 for an episode, they would give you $60,000 for the pilot. So there are a lot of actors. This is super interesting about, I think, with my career compared to some other people. I had people in the street thinking I was a regular on a bunch of different shows.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting paid that. I was getting paid like as a guest.
Yeah.
On like everything.
Yeah.
So I never made, I actually made more money in this like couple year period in doing voiceovers I just had a lucky campaign for a car, and that made me more than I had ever made acting. So it was the good and the bad of it. The bad was I never felt like financially like, and I knew a lot of people that would get a pilot every fucking year. And I'm like, why are they on the inside?
Yeah.
And I'm on the outside. No one's giving me this stuff. A lot of those people, like some of those people are still, they finally got a show and it's on right now and they've made more money. They could, you know, made a ton of money. A lot of those people, they're not acting anymore. They were used to getting a lot of money for not much work.
Yeah.
They were used to being on the list and getting the thing. And then it just dried up and they never really acted in between those pilots. I was the opposite. I was like, you know, the scavenger taking the, I was working a lot. And so people got to know my work. I got to play a bunch of different roles, sometimes on great shows, sometimes on not so great shows, sometimes, you know, was less than mediocre. But I was like, you know, you meet people, you're out there, whatever. So I never, it's weird. It's like it kind of has, the last couple years have really been the best for me. And that was partially because I realized I had a really good year in like 2014, 2015. I was so busy on a couple of different shows. I was, you know, it was great.
Was that Wind River?
No, this is before that. This was like, I was working on this show called, again, it came off of a drought. It came off of a drought. But then I was working on this show called Mistresses on ABC, which was like a summer soap, Alyssa Milano. And then I was working on Teen Wolf, which was like a big hit for young people. And I was working on, is those two, I feel like there was something else. And then I did Hot Pursuit, which was this movie with Reese Witherspoon and Sofia Vergara. And I had never said a word on a studio film before because I didn't go in for studio films when I was younger. They wouldn't let me in the door. This, I got a role. I was like number three on the call sheet, which is a bit of a lie if you watch the movie. But I'm just in a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
But still, I was like, boom. It was awesome. Then I look back at that. And then Scandal was the other one. Mm-hmm. I did Scandal, and that was really helpful. I didn't realize what a big show it was when it came. Again, that had a long story. That was like Linda Lowy, casting director. Years before, in like 2008 or 9, I went in for her for a Pete Berg pilot called Trauma. And I went into her office, and I loved Friday Night Lights. And I was like, all those kids on Friday Night Lights were like ridiculous finds of talent. And so when I went in there, I remember I wanted to just tell her, like, this is an amazing job of casting, you know, like not kissing your ass, just telling you it's amazing. I went into her office in, it was like not Burbank, it was like on the east side of LA. And I remember sitting there and I was sitting in the waiting room and there are people on the phone like, will Bill Dawes come read for this? No, oh, we want to make an offer to this. And I'm sitting there waiting to go in for a pre-read.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tell her how much I loved her. And I'm just listening. I'm like waiting for like 45 minutes, listening to all the assistants, like kissing all these agencies' asses to get these actors in. And I'm like, motherfuckers, I'm sitting in this fucking room. Like, you know, I was like getting pissed to the point where I was like, I kept it together. I went in, I read for her, and I just said, I got to tell you, you know, that I love what you did with Friday Night Lights. She was just, she's a great person, really cool.
Casting directors rarely get, not respect, but they rarely get like accolades, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm sure like, whatever, you don't want to kiss her ass, but I'm sure that meant a lot to her.
Yeah, I think because it was genuine. It wasn't like I was going in bullshit. I really loved, I loved Friday Night Lights, and I specifically loved that I was seeing all these actors that I'd never seen before, and they were all great. So I read for her. It goes well. They call me in for a test. They call me in, for the producers. I go in. I read. It feels really good. I see a lot of actors there that had, like, better careers than me. It feels really good. They go to set up. I'm going to be, like, the first guy to get a test deal set up. It's like, you're going to test next week, and then it gets pushed. You're going to test next, and then I'm like, what's happening with this? Finally, they call, and they say, they tested this other kid, these two people for this other role. They liked one of those kids so much, they gave him your role. So you're not testing. I never tested. So I kind of got the, and that was like right around the time of the writer's strike, I think. Rug pulled from me. She ended up that show got picked up. She ended up offering me a role, like it was like a guest spot, but it was kind of a cool little raw little thing as like the love interest of the main girl. When it got picked up, I went and shot that. It was really cool. It was the same guy that did Friday Night Lights, so it was like no marks and like very raw. I loved the way they worked. But that was it. Just one episode, and that was it. Years later, they offered me the Scandal thing. And that came right after getting released from this Katherine Heigl thing.
Yeah,
so I was like, again, down in the dumps. They call. They go, you got an offer to do Scandal. We don't know what it is. They're being very hush-hush. They say it's recurring, but they're not saying how much, like how big it is. And I was like, okay, cool. Send me the sides. I was here in Long Beach actually with Deirdre. And I was like, we get that we're driving away from the beach and because we were here like over the summer for a little period.
Long Beach, New York,
New York, Long Beach, New York. And I go, oh, the email came in, read this scene as I'm driving and the kids are in the back. And it's like, Cyrus is at a bar, you know, Michael, and it wasn't even a name yet. It wasn't even Michael. It was Handsome Young Man.
Yeah.
Handsome Young Man at the bar. And it's like, Cyrus, Handsome Young Man. Cyrus, Handsome Young Man. And I go, oh, fuck. She goes, what? And I go, I know where this is going. And it's like, cut to, they're in the hotel room. He's naked. Da, da, da. And I was like a gigolo. I was like a male hooker. And I was like, do I take this? Is it going to be this like gratuitous? Like I'm doing this thing. I take off my shirt. I have this like I make out with Jeff Perry, and then like I'm in one scene in the next episode, and that's it. And I was like the equivalent of like I'm like you know the like I show skin and I'm out.
Yeah.
And I just was like I didn't know the show. I didn't know it was that big of a show when I got that. I knew, and I didn't really know Grey's Anatomy, but I knew people really loved Shonda Rhimes' writing. So I was like, no, she's not going to write a character that's cardboard.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I could use the work. It's a, you know, I was like, I think it's a pretty big hit for them, not realizing it's like a rabid fan hit.
Yeah.
I said yes. And Jeff Perry was awesome. Jeff Perry, by the way, is married to Linda Lowy. So later on, she's like, yeah, she's like, I was thinking who would be an actor that I would want to put Jeff with. And she's like, so that kind of worked out. You know, but that's like a 6-year lead from when I didn't
that's
get
that. That's crazy,
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's why I'd say the 10,000 no's thing. It's like you just get pummeled and pummeled and pummeled, but you got to kind of get your wins when you can get them.
So what is the basis of 10,000 no's exactly?
So the origin of that title is I had just read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, and he talks about like the 10,000 hours principle of you have to practice something, you know, very concentrated practice for 10,000 hours to become an expert. So my buddy's parents were out from Philadelphia and they were visiting, and his dad was like, hey, how's it going? And I was like, it's good. This is in like, I don't even know. This is in like probably 2012 or 2011. And I'm like, it's good. You know, I said, I'm working, but it's hard and whatever. You know, I said, I've been talking to this. There was a class in, there was a school in LA. Oh my God. I'm blanking on it right now. What the hell the name?
By the way, I'm actually very impressed with your memory of all these names.
Oh,
and one thing I'll say, and we'll go back to your story. First of all, Matt is one of the nicest guys. You're such a fucking nice dude.
Thanks,
I ever have known you.
Thank you.
And I feel like you haven't changed with success. Like, I've seen some people fucking change. But maybe that's like a different type of... Anyway, and you're really good with like everyone. Like the COVID lady came in. You're like, hey, how was the marathon? You're very friendly. So when I booked this role on City on the Hill and... I found out that you were doing it. They're like, who's your scenes with? Everyone on the crew is, Melton. Oh, he's the best. He's so great.
Oh, that's so nice to hear.
It's so well liked.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
It was nothing that I never thought that was important as an actor growing up. I was like, I'm just going to be good. Who cares if people like me? Is Christian Bale well liked? It helps to be well liked. Anyway.
I don't know. That's nice. It's nice to hear. It doesn't always, you know, like, I feel like, I actually think it's funny when you're like, with success, you're like, I'm like looking around like, who's he talking about? Like, I'm so fucking slugging it out. Like, I think there's always a, there's a, this is, well, this sounds totally name droppy, but I'll say it because he said it. Kevin Bacon was on 10,000 No's, and I asked him this question. I said, like, well, you always know there's going to be work for Kevin Bacon,
yeah,
right? Like, good work for Kevin. He's like, and I saw the look on his face, and I was like, really,
whoa,
man? I go, oh, dude, you're killing me. And he's like, no. He's like, look, he goes, I guess when I come around to it, yeah, yes, I know there will be something. He's like, but the cuts in the beginning of your career are so deep that it never goes away. Henry Winkler, fucking icon, told me the same thing. Same exact thing. He's like, I work. I go, you've done so, I know a lot of your work, but there's so much that I didn't know until I was about to interview you. I'm like, you were an executive producer on MacGyver? And he's like, I work because I never know if I'm going to work again.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're fucking Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think when you say that to me, I thank you, but I think it's because I feel like I got to get a lot better. I feel like, sure, I wish I was better. I feel like I, you know.
But I will say this, because a lot of people, they look at acting and comedy, but, you know, acting in particular, they go, well, we don't have any control over it. It's luck and blah, 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 blah. But I think that can be very misleading, because the truth is, you're given a shot on West Wing, and you fucking nailed it. Like, a lot of people are given shots, and they don't quite fucking kill it. And it goes away, and they don't realize it's because they didn't. So, you know, the opportunity came, but you took a lot of people in your situation, maybe didn't.
Yeah,
and you created great relationships with people, and it seems like you just know a lot of fucking people. I do projects all the time, and I'll bump into someone like, hey, remember me? I'm like, I have no idea. I was like, oh, I do that. I was like, oh, shit, sorry.
No, but that's actually scary, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because I think I told you this. Now I moved back to New York, and like, we're looking at a list of casting directors, and one, I was like, just like almost embarrassed, mortified, depressed by looking at the list and going like, oh yeah, she's a giant, she's a giant, he's a giant, he's a giant. They never saw me.
They saw me once.
They have no idea who I am, at least as far as I know. And then there were some times where they're like, oh, so-and-so is a fan of yours. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what did they... And I don't even realize, because, you know, in our defense, when you go in for an audition, at least me, I'm like, I want to get this job. I'm looking at the material. I'm looking at the thing. Who am I reading with? I don't know who's in the room. I actually think I'm bad a lot of times with that stuff where, like, I'll say this. I'm good as just a regular human in life. If I'm on a set, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
Blah, where are you from? Blah, blah, blah. Maybe I'll remember it. Maybe I won't. I actually think I'm bad business-wise. Like, sometimes, like, there are some people, they know who cast this and who the executives are, and I'm like, oh crap, yeah. I should be doing more of that, because there's people in a casting office, or someone who was an assistant in a casting office. I'll say this, I'm pretty confident I was probably nice to them,
yeah,
as a human, but I'm not confident that I would know them if I tripped over them. I'm not confident I would know their name. I'm not confident that I realized they were in that casting office.
Yeah.
I actually feel like I should be better at that. But yeah, I think, you know, like the, in terms of what you can control and what you can't, that's kind of all I, you know, talk about on 10,000 No's. And now I do this like insiders virtual community where I actually do that with like young actors and filmmakers. My thing is like, you can't control. Look, a lot of it is luck and right place at the right time for a specific job.
Yeah.
Definitely. But over a career, over a lifetime,
yeah,
you know, I always look at it like this. Like, you'll go and audition. Actually, look at those stories. You're not auditioning for that role. You're auditioning for life. George Ann Walken. If you think about it, as pissed as I was at her, it's actually really good casting. She saw me in the North End. Saw an essence that I had. She didn't think I was right for this other thing. Pissed me off because I felt I had the range to play damaged.
Yeah.
She didn't. So that pisses me off. Why can't I stretch? On the other hand, when the role comes along for Sopranos, she's like, oh, that's the essence. That's the same essence as the guy that he played in North End.
Yeah.
He could do this. You know, Linda Lowy, same thing. It's like, And she had said that I had gone in for Grey's Anatomy a bunch of times and never got it. She's like, but Shonda liked you, but you weren't the guy for that particular role.
Okay, so one question I have for you is, what, you've been doing 10,000 Notes for how long, the podcast?
Since 2017.
What would you say is the thing that was most surprising that you learned doing this podcast? Because you've interviewed a lot of actors, right?
A lot of actors and really a lot of different industries, you know, athletes, entrepreneurs, like healers, survivors, like crash survivors, cancer survivors, writers, directors, producers. I've now kind of geared it more toward our industry because in the beginning people were like, you should be niche. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to just talk to actors. I want to talk to everybody. So it was good for my soul. Wasn't as smart necessarily business-wise, although there's an argument to be said that, like, what my goal was, what I guess kind of happened, was I don't want it to be so narrow because I think it's a bigger topic than just actors. Like, dealing with uncertainty, overcoming rejection. You were saying, what's the biggest thing I've learned, like, from the guests?
Yeah, was it something that you, like, learned from doing the podcast, either from a guest you had or just the experience of doing it, where you go, oh wow, I didn't realize this. This is like transformational. Like,
yeah, well, I don't even think I can narrow it to one. I could say the reason I started it is because that role on Scandal just went away out of nowhere. And I was kind of like, I got so frustrated. You know, as I tell all these stories, I'm like, fuck, it feels like the rug always gets pulled out from under me. And I think the podcast was my answer to that. I was like, I don't want to wait till somebody hires me to do this one sliver of what I'm capable of, which is acting.
Yeah.
I bring more to the table than just acting. I have a voice. I want to do something. I want to create my own sandbox. Even if two people listen, I don't give a shit. I'm doing it for me.
Yeah.
That's how I started. That was a valuable lesson. People were like, eh, it's not smart. It's going to be a lot of time. And I was just like, I don't give a shit. I need to do this. So I guess trusting my gut was good. You know, the logistics involved in it that I didn't realize when I got into it. I'm producing a show. Every week I produced a fucking show. It was a lot of work, but it got me to realize, like, oh, it's in the doing. It's not in the, like, you can talk about it. You can, you know, you can Monday morning quarterback other people's, oh, it's not quite good, whatever. But when you do it, at a certain point, even if it's not even that good, at a certain point, you're like, oh, you've done this, 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 and this. That's like a tangible, you know, evidence of your work.
Yeah.
There was something about that that has been really, it's brought confidence to me. Ironically, it's brought confidence as an actor, because I walk into a room and I'm no longer like the sniveling little actor, like, please hire me. I'm like, hey, great, love to work, love to show you what I would do with this role. You may or may not want me for it, but I got a whole other fucking thing that I do, so I got this thing too, you know. There's some certain amount of, like, you just feel like you did something, you know? And then like the feedback that people are actually getting helped. I mean, it's like, it's maybe more gratifying than anything else. It's like, I get emails or direct messages and people are like, keep, you know, 'cause sometimes I'm like, why am I doing this? It's a lot of work. Like, and they're like, keep doing what you're doing. Like, you know, a lot of us are listening. It really helps. It helped me when I was going through the pandemic. It helped me when I was going, and that's cool. That's like, that makes me feel like I have, you know, that's what it is. It's like, I feel like I have like more of a purpose and a point of view as a result of this. And then, and then just like what the guests have really, you know, the recurring themes or recurring things is like, you realize everybody feels like they got screwed. Mm-hmm. Everybody feels like they were almost down
they
and out.
They haven't quite landed where they want to live.
Yeah. Everybody feels it. It's like, you're not, and that's the point of the podcast, you're not alone. Like, wherever you are right now, you feel like you got nailed in the gut. You're like, you know, you feel like you can't breathe.
Yeah.
You feel like you're the only one, and everybody else is like, listen to these two motherfuckers, they're sitting on a set talking. Yeah. Well, yeah, right now, at this particular period in time, we are. guess what? At some point, this job goes away.
Yeah.
You know, the job's a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
The job is like, it's cool.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's awesome. I'm so grateful. I mean, I'm fucking whistling Dixie right now that we're working.
Yeah.
I know it'll go away at some point.
Yeah.
And like, if all of my value is in this, you know, whether it be this or any other job right now, it's like, is in Chris Case and Showtime, City on a Hill. That's pretty sad because it's going to go away at some point. Maybe it goes a long time. Maybe it wins
even
awards.
It goes for 6 years. It still
doesn't
goes
matter.
Away.
Like at some point, you know. Actually, I won't name names, but the great teamster here was telling me a story of an actress that I don't know her. I know her work, and she's done huge stuff.
Yeah.
And he was saying, I was telling him about 10,000 No's, and he's like, oh, she said the same thing. It's just the rejection is so hard. She got off the phone with her agent, and I'm like, she's saying that? Get her on my show. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it doesn't matter. Like, that's that's what I've gotten about, like, from the gift that I've been given from this is, like, I've read a lot of books like that. Like, I've read a lot of books where they'll say the same thing, but when you sit down with like a flesh and blood person who tells you they were on the ground for 4 years, I'm just thinking of this woman, Susie Batiste. She was like down and out for 4 years, a serial entrepreneur. She was like, I remember the sound of the tow truck pulling my car that was repossessed out of the driveway. She's like, I was out for 4 years. She followed her bliss and did some stuff. She got angry. She did whatever. And then she had a zing of an idea. It became Poopery, which is like a $500 million company. She got another company. She's awesome. More than that success, she's awesome. Like, she's just a cool, cool woman who's like helping other women. And, you know, you hear that from her and you actually like have a conversation. She's a friend now. It's like, you're like, okay, so it can be done.
Yeah.
I can get out from under this cloud. That has been the big one. Like, because there are times, as, you know, you and I haven't seen each other, but I just know, because I know what you do, and it's similar to me. I know you also do the comedy, so that's probably even more brutal. I know, even though we haven't seen each other, you have had moments, because I have, where it just feels like, I don't know, man. Like, why am I doing this? Nobody wants me. I'm done. I'm not that good. I may never work again. And you name it. It's like it runs the gamut.
Yeah.
But when you have this kind of like access to people that have these conversations with you, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Chill out. Take a breath. You've done some stuff. Build on your wins. Put one foot in front of the other. And then, like, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
And you do. You somehow figure a way out. Usually, it's like help from, you know, I have no idea even what your religious beliefs are. I believe in God. I think it's like, there have been too many times when I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen. And something just feels like it drops from the sky.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't do that. I didn't, you know. I'd like to think I work hard, but you know, I got helped in some way, or a friend, or however you want. However, it doesn't matter what the semantics are. I guess it's like somehow somebody, like, you can't really do it on your own. I wish I could. I can't. Like, you get help from people that are like, you know, out of the kindness of their heart, or they're like, you know, maybe you did something to help that, whatever.
Yeah.
Or maybe you know, like, you go back to the thing before about well-liked. It's like, that'll get you only so far too. Talent will only get you so far. Being well-liked will only get you so far. It's like, how do you put yourself in a position where you're you know, nobody's going to stick their neck out for you. Just like, no one is going to go like, Billy, I love you. You're not going to be good for my project at all, but I love you, so I'm going to put you in it. It's like, no, I love you, and you're going to be really good for this project.
Yeah.
They're not going to like do it unless you have, they're like, yeah, Billy's reliable. Yeah. He's going to show up. He's going to know his shit and he's going to be great. He's going to surprise me. So, and I like him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm like really fucking long-winded today.
No, this is great. I think a lot of people, you know, I feel like anyone, one thing I've learned too is that no matter what you're doing, it's almost the same conversation. Because even if you're like a graphic designer, there's always like a fucking next thing. It's very rare to find someone who's just content in their life. And usually those people, you really want nothing to do with.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the people, the Rascal Scooter at Walmart, who are just bacteria. And they're just fucking, they're happy. They just have a barbecue grill and they hang out.
Well, sometimes you wonder, like, you go, you know, there is something to be learned about, like, what is the, it's interesting. That's like a whole new can of worms, though. It's like gratitude.
Yeah.
Because while you're doing, like, I have to be careful. Like, it's like cool to say, yeah, yeah, you know, you're ambitious. I want what's next or whatever. There's also something to just go, like, I'm just grateful for like what's right now. Like yeah. Right now, this conversation right here, this is like one of those moments where you're like, oh, this is really, really cool. And it's also great to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Because I almost think like if you don't, and maybe someone who's, you know, you're making a joke, but it's like maybe someone who's just going like, yeah, this is great. This is my life and this is great.
Mm-hmm.
That brings more of that into your life.
Absolutely.
Like there's something.
Yeah.
Coach.
No, it's so true.
You know,
it's
don't
so
you
true.
Think we're like, there's something I almost think I have, maybe it's a little too much pride of this. Like, I'm going to grind. I'm going to stay in it. It's like,
yeah.
For what, dude? You're going to fucking get hit by a bus someday. Like, yeah. Well, look what happened yesterday on that set. It's like out of nowhere, someone tragically is killed. Like, and what are you doing? So what are you doing it all for? So there's also that, which is like,
yeah,
you know,
it's so funny how many big actors I've had on, and I'll name because he talks about the podcast, like Garrett Dillahunt, who is, I don't know if you know Garrett.
I know who he is.
He's
I don't
had
know
an
him.
Incredible career.
Yeah,
but same thing. He's always like, have I really? I'm like, are you fucking? How many Oscar winning films have you been in? You fucking piece of shit.
Yeah,
he just he literally was like, you know, he's like late 50s now, and he's kind of going like, what have I been doing? I've just been running from set to set, and I've never really dealt with myself or my marriage, or sometimes I just felt like I'm just like running. It's like I was just addicted to the running and the hamster wheel of it.
Yeah.
And everyone goes, oh, you have such a great career. It's like I never really stopped and appreciated it on some level.
That's interesting. It's true. It's like,
and all we look at, I look at that, I'm like, give me the fucking hamster wheel. I want the fucking hamster wheel.
Well, there's always some, like, I always, me and my buddy are always saying, like, there's always something. Like, you'll get, you know, because then you'll get there, and then when you're there, there will be some new thing. It's like, you don't outrun your own issues. You don't outrun it. No job is going to make it. It could shield you from them for a little bit. You can convince yourself that, like, you got past it. But that's why I say again, it's like, it's a band-aid if you're not looking deeper.
Yeah.
And, like, we all have that. Like, we could all, if we were being honest, you look and you're like, where could I be better? Where could I be a better dad? Where could I be a better husband? Where could I be a better son, a better brother, a better friend? All of it. Where could I be a better actor? It's a lot.
Yeah. And you're married for how long now? How long have you been with her in general?
The night before Halloween 1999 was our first date.
Wow.
And we got married right then when we were doing the play, September 7th, 2002.
22 years, man.
So 20 years.
I know everyone's like, there's ups and downs. But still, like, just the fact that you're still with her and you have a kid. Two kids.
Yeah.
You still love each other, and like she's your biggest supporter, I'm sure, and fan. I mean, I guess having a partner like that, you know, obviously is probably a big part of your success as well, right?
It's I mean, I'm very lucky. It's not without, you know, it's not without its stress and its ups and downs and all of it. And there are many times when I feel like, you know, we'll have these conversations. There are many times that I'm like, God, like, being married to an actor, being married, like, it, as tough it is as it is for us to tell these stories, I think it's way worse for the spouse, the partner, the, you know, the parent of someone who's doing this, to watch someone go through
Them in their bed fucking moping for 3 days straight.
Don't you think it's worth, like, because you have no control over the outcome when you're that person.
Yeah.
But you're affected by it.
Yeah.
But you're, but like.
And there's nothing you can say. You can't, when someone lost that big job, you can't be like, just be grateful for what you have. You'd be like, shut up, bitch. It's like, trying here.
But you also, when you lose that big job, that also affects them.
Oh, for
sure. You know what I mean? Like, so it's a very, you know, it's very difficult. I mean, it's so, you know, she and I will both say, like, we didn't really, you don't really know what you're getting into with this business until you get into it, until you do it.
Yeah.
You really don't. Yeah. Like, and I'm sure any business would, you know, anybody would say that. But this one is pretty extreme.
Yes.
You know, there's no, there's no, like, every industry is like that. And to be at the top, that's the cool thing about having interviewed entrepreneurs. You're like, oh, actors are bitching like we've got the market cornered on being told no. It's like, no.
Yeah,
entrepreneurs
yeah.
do that, and they have, like, a whole company that they have to feed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so they're really out there. But I think maybe, like, there's, well, entrepreneurs do compare to it, and athletes, pro athletes, but there's no, like, if you're not at the top or it's kind of close to the top, it's not like there's, like, a secure package. Like, you go, like, I'll opt for the, you know, the low level one, not just
tier three.
Yeah, tier three. It's not like that. It's not like you can have a job and whatever. It's like zero job.
Yeah,
zero income.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's very, there's really not much of a safety net.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Which is, you know, which is a lot of, like, what I think what I've done, what I've segued with the podcast was, like, I'm doing the podcast, and then I realized that people were responding to what I was doing. And then part of my creating that whole insiders group I told you about was, you know, I was emailing people and helping them anyway.
Yeah.
And that takes time. And I'm like, I don't have enough time. And then I was like, why don't I just build something that helps them? And the other was, oh, this is a business on the side that correlates to my acting.
Yeah.
If my acting does well, it affects that in a good way. When my acting's not doing well, it's good for me,
for
my
sure.
head. I'm helping people. And it's more steady income. It's not as much, but it's more steady, and it's like a log in the fire, because my career feels like, you know, a little gasoline, and then it's totally out.
Yeah.
Maybe a firecracker, and then it's out. This is like a log.
Yeah.
A small log. So it's like, I always think in that way, like, how do I get, can I have something that's like steady, that makes the whole thing sustainable
and still creative, so this can, fulfilling,
and it still works. It's not like something, it's not like I'm going and I'm like doing something that's a whole other,
you're not going back
field.
To bartending. Yeah,
right. And it's not like it actually is building, and then out of that, then I, like, will coach some of those people, and those, I'm getting as much out of it as them.
Like,
sure. I love teaching, because it's, because I'm always like, I need to be taught. So I'm like, you know, I'm not teaching from a place of, like, I got the answers.
Yeah.
I'm more teaching from a place of, like, you need the answers. I'm a guy who's been searching for the answers forever. So I maybe have just more experience searching for the answer.
Yeah.
I don't have it, but I've got, you know, I could probably help you in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've kind of been through a lot of shit.
Yeah.
You know?
And do you have clients?
I do. I have. So it's more, this group is once a week. We do a live Zoom. It's like a coaching call. It's almost like, it's motivational. It's logistics, but it's also like, it's almost like group therapy for creatives.
Yeah.
It's like nobody else knows, as we're saying, what you're going through. So this provides you that community. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I've had some people say, like, hey, can you put me on tape? Can you do this? So I'm like kind of in the midst of like working out for a few people in my group where it's like, you get for a monthly fee, can I kind of coach them? And yeah. Then I have this one guy that I coach. I've been coaching. He's actually amazing. He came from a different field altogether, sought me out because I did something with his business partner. And he was like, I want to be an actor. And I was like, oh, dude. And I just like tried to talk him out of it. And he has actually been amazing and made amazing progress. And he, like, I love working with him because he's like a... he's a beast. He does all this. Like, he's a guy who I'm like, this is what you need to do. He does it. Then some. Yeah. And he's actually getting results. It's been It's been cool. So I really, you know, I dig all that stuff. And then it's also led to, like, because of the book and stuff, it's led to me going and speaking at some places.
That's
and
very
it's,
cool.
It's cool. It's yeah, like it's yeah. Great. It's like it's fun. It's like. As you can see, this isn't right, is it?
No. It's an hour.
Okay. But as you can see, it's like there's no preparation needed. Same with you. It's like you ask about the career, about acting, or whatever. It's like
here we go.
I don't shut the fuck up.
So what do you think? Let's wrap it up on that. So what do you think? What's the future look like for Matty Del Negro?
Oh man!
Like do you still have the bucket list stuff, the pie in the sky stuff, 5 year, 10 year? Like, in general, is there a thing that you go, okay, we're talking about how you never land, but in your mind, you have a fantastical place where you're like, I've landed.
Probably not in the way that you're asking. It's not like if I'm really being honest, I don't think I have the bucket list of, like, I want to work with, you know, I almost feel like guilty that I don't. I'll say this. I'd love to work with the best on the best material. I feel lucky, like, I've been able to work with really talented people, really great material. I love that. I think what I really want for my life is, like, where, however it turns out to be, I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm like, I can't control it. I can't steer it.
Yeah.
But I want to be able to, like, you know, have work like this particular job, and it can be, you know, where I'm well paid. This business that I've had that I'm growing on the side, I'd love that to be reaching more people, helping more people, also making more money, frankly. So it's just like, I'd like for my family's sake and my sanity's sake, I'd love to be doing exactly what I'm doing. You know, it could always be a higher level, but that'll, you know, I don't think that's going to go away. You're always going to be higher level. But, like, I feel like I'm in a decent little pocket here, but, like, just more, certainty. There's no certainty in life, but, like more, I don't know, comfort. Like, I still feel like I'm still scraping, and I'm like, and I'm not that young. And I'm like, I feel like for as hard as I work, I should be maybe, like, I want to not be thinking as much about, like, oh, if I go take a vacation with my family, like, I'm not worried that I'm missing out on something, out on an opportunity, you know, just to be, I think, more dropped in than I am right now on my life. I mean, I'm still in my mind. I feel like I'm still, like, at the very beginning of, which is cool in some ways. And it's also like, well, what have you been doing? What have you been doing for, like, the last, like, almost 30 years, man? Like, you're not a spring chicken. Like, it's like maybe the universe is trying to tell you something.
You know,
like, it feels like I'm, obviously, look, I'm just trying to be honest here. Like, obviously, be nice to be recognized for work, and that could come in the form of awards. But even that, I would love it. So I'm lying if I'm like, I wouldn't want to win an Emmy or
awards.
Yeah, of course, like, you want to win, like, an Emmy or an Oscar or stuff like that. But maybe more importantly, I want to be working with cool people. I want to work with my friends.
Yeah.
You know, on cool shit that I care about. And I want to have a life for my family that's like not, you know, it's not crazy. It's not like, I don't know if that idea that when I was 22 and it was like, I want to be Brad Pitt or, Tom Cruise.
I remember during Burning Blue, they were auditioning for Superman. You're like, I could be Superman.
Yeah, guess what? Yeah, great fucking time. That they wouldn't see me for that role because I was too ethnic. Swear to God. And meanwhile, I was working at California Pizza Kitchen, and I had this stupid fucking curl in my hair, and they called me the son of Jor-El. I'm like, so these motherfuckers are calling me son of Jor-El, but you guys won't see me because I'm too ethnic.
Yeah, imagine saying that now. You can't say that now.
That's so that, yeah. So, but yeah, you know. I don't know. I would say I'm not. It's not really like.
It's more of a general feeling.
It's
of
a just feeling. Like, yeah, like it's a feeling, peace, and I feel like
peace
I.
Of mind.
Yeah, I actually feel like the good thing for me is I feel like people go like, "What would you do if you won the lottery?" And I just say, I would do exactly what I'm doing right now. I would just be less stressed.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do anything different. But I would like that feeling of like being able to go like,
yeah.
And I don't feel being totally honest. I don't feel that I have that right now.
Yeah,
and that bums me out. But it's also, you know, it is what it is. I'm also super lucky.
Yeah,
you know, I'm super fortunate, and it's just like, you know, kind of a respect for any. Actors, or I'm sure you have a bunch of like actors and comics and do you say comics or you say comedians?
Comics say comics.
Okay, so comics, writers, but I'm sure that's your audience is comprised of that. And I just like, I take my hat off to anybody who's doing this because it's really, it's not easy.
Yeah.
It's really to stick it out. Is not easy.
It's either like willpower, just stupidity, or a combination of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think of you. We haven't, you know, we worked together 20 years ago. One, it's so cool that we work together now. And as I said, I feel like we're like, you know, the old veterans now. Like, yeah, we did something back in 2002, back in 02.
We're the Muppets in the top balcony.
But it's like, you know, I think about just like, how, I mean, did you go to Princeton?
Yeah.
I mean, you, like, think about, you know,
what
we're still
talking. What a waste of a degree.
Well, no, think about, like, we're talking about, and you've had a lot of success, but you're still, I'm guessing, like me, kind of going like, well, I'm not where.
But I'm looking at you going like, fucking,
and
you. I'm looking at you go like, you fucking made it, right? And you're looking at other people going,
I'm going,
Chris Messina made it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's looking at fucking...
He's looking at Rockwell. Yeah. Rockwell, yeah. And it's like, there's that. But there's also like, look at this guy who, you know, went to Princeton. He's done jujitsu. He can get up in front of it. He can make people laugh. He can do this. He can beat other people. Think of that guy in any other field. Is he having the same conversation, or is that like a guy who's probably on the close to the top of his field?
That's
and the close to the top, you're close to the top of this field. But what I was saying was like the rewards, the distribution of rewards is different than in another industry.
Yeah.
Where if you were the same exact like percentage from the top as you are in acting,
I have a boat.
You'd have a boat. Yeah. You'd have a boat and an island. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what's crazy about it. And I don't know if people realize it. There's just the economics of it. There are only this many roles and there are this many people that want to do them. It's the same thing with sports.
Yeah.
You got how many teams in the NFL and how many kids played Pop Warner?
That's crazy.
It's like it's not really great odds. So if you're even close to the, you know, I mean, just imagine what the Tom Brady's of the world. That's the Christian Bale's of the world.
Yeah.
That's the DiCaprio's of the world.
Yeah.
You know? It's like...
And then once you're there, you just got to stay on top. So you're going to yell out your DP if he walks in your fucking frame.
This is so nice. I really will apologize to your audience. This is what happens. I told him when I sit down with a friend, I'm just going to, like, spew. And I was like, not going to really talk.
This is a weird thing. When I'll have guests on, they're like, oh, I blabbed. I'm like, that's the whole point. You know what the worst part is? When you have a guest and you ask them questions, they're like, yeah. Anyway, you know,
and
what I mean?
How do you feel about
just
that?
Just keep talking, motherfucker. Believe me, it's the best. You got to have guests who are just, like, going off. You know, yeah. And if people, you know, there are going to be people who find it very interesting, and if people don't, fuck them, you know, watch the next one.
Yeah.
I interview a porn star. Maybe you'll like that one. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. Matt Del Negro. Now, how can people find you, Matthew Del Negro?
They can, most active on Instagram, and that is at Matty Del, MattyDel.
And where can people get your book?
Go to 10,000nos.com. It's just 10000nos.com. And that's where you get the book. You get the, go to the insiders community if people are interested in signing up for that. You know, there's also MatthewDelNegro.com. But, you know.
And if you don't know his work as an actor, he's fantastic. So just check it out. Go to his IMDb or Google him incredible guy, incredible actor, and I'm so glad we're working on this. We'll see how it turns out, man.
Thank you, brother. I'm so happy you're with me here. It's awesome.
All right, bye-bye.